Coming up on this episode of the Sarlacc Pit Podcast, we break down The Force Awakens. Yes, we finally get to it. It's been 3 years in the making, and we finally get to talk about it. And we're going to do that with Carl LeClaire of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. We talk characters, theories, speculation, and everything in between. So let it awaken in you, and let's get this party started right now.
Got to the Sarlacc pit.
And the powerful Pleiades.
The almighty Sarlacc.
Binds the galaxy together.
All powerful Sarlacc.
Its energy surrounds us and binds us.
Welcome to the Sarlacc Pit, official podcast of GalacticBinder.com and Yodasnews.com, the fans podcast. So grab your lightsabers and join your hosts, Matt Krenke and Chris Hoffice Planet, for this round of discussions.
Welcome back, Star Wars fans, to the Sarlacc Pit Podcast, a podcast to help you digest everything in the Star Wars universe. The Sarlacc Pit is brought to you by GalacticBinder.com and Yodasnews.com, and we thank those guys for their support of the podcast. This is episode 92, December 21st, 2015. If you're new to the show, my name is Matt, the Crankster. Welcome. And let me bring in host and creator from Memphis, Tennessee. It is Chris Hoff, Ice Planet Smith. What's up, my friend?
What's going on? It's been an exciting weekend.
Man, this has been building up. The last time we podcasted, we had Mike Cohen on, and we were talking about the trailer. And you know what? We kind of come back because it's The Force Awakens. Everybody's talking about a podcast all around that are involved in Star Wars, even some that aren't, are talking about The Force Awakens. And it is our turn to do it tonight, and we're not going to do it alone because we brought in an old friend of ours from the Wampa's Lair podcast. Carl LeClaire is here. What's up, my friend?
Oh, man, nowhere I'd rather be in all the world except for maybe Jakku, except the Sarlacc.
Or in a theater watching it one more time.
Good point. Yeah, good point.
So, hey, we're going to get into it. We're going to get into Chris and Carl, our thoughts. I know, Carl, you've already talked about it on your podcast, but like myself, you'd mentioned it. You can talk about it some more. We're going to talk about some of the things we liked, maybe some of the things we didn't like, some theories, some speculation. But before we do that, I just wanted to get your guys, and then we're going to jump right in right now. I wanted to get your guys' take on your experience real quick before we hit some of the other stuff. For me, of course, like everybody else, I saw it on Thursday with a bunch of other Star Wars fans that were in the theater. And I have to say, I was really tickled to go in there and experience this because it was great. I've been turned off to like the theater experience for a while just because of the, I don't know, it's just like the phone thing and everybody talking and this and that. And I've kind of been like kind of turned off, you know, and I have a pretty nice theater in my house. So a lot of, I haven't been to the movies in years. I'll be just straight out front. I haven't been to the movies in years. So, of course, the only time I'm going to go to the movies is to see a Star Wars movie. And I was just, it was really cool. I mean, the crowd clapped at certain parts of the movie, you know, the appearance of Han Solo, the appearance, you know, some of the stuff Rey did and the appearance of Luke. And they were clapping and cheering. And it was just fun. It was fun to experience that again. And you only get that. I only get that with a Star Wars film because that's the only thing I go to. But it was really cool, and I was really happy. And, of course, everybody there was a Star Wars fan, so everybody was quiet. I never heard a phone ring. I never saw a phone light up the whole time I was in there. Of course, I was really focused. But it was really cool, and I just thought I had a great time. And seeing it in IMAX, oh, my gosh. IMAX was incredible. 3D. They talked about some scenes that were filmed for IMAX. I mean, I'm going to see it again this weekend, and it's going to be IMAX because it's a great experience. But before we get to you, Chris, you brought us out. Carl, your experience, I haven't heard your podcast yet, so I don't know if you guys talked about this, but your experience, because you were with Joe and a bunch of other guys, so how was your experience?
Yeah. Well, I was actually busy Snapchat videoing the whole movie. It took a while.
That'll work.
I'm just kidding. it was... You know what? I'll be honest. I was, so the group was great. The problem was this. So I drove down there. We were in like, in New Jersey, just a little bit outside of New York City. And I drove down through New York City rush hour traffic. So I had quite a few Kylo Ren temper tantrums in the car on the way down.
Oh, okay.
Cause I thought I was going to be late, and I was like, I was losing my crap, dude. Yeah. I was just like, are you kidding me? I've been waiting 3 years for this. So I literally pulled, our showing was at 7. I pulled in at 7:01.
Oh,
right. Like, they don't start trailers even on time, right? You know, so I didn't miss anything, but I kind of, you know, everybody was kind of scattered arriving. So I didn't get to really see a lot of people beforehand, which kind of stunk. Just got in, yeah. You know, got settled. The reason I didn't want to be late at all, too, and I kept saying to my girlfriend who came down with me, I was like, I don't want you to, because she's never been to a Star Wars premiere. I was like, I don't want you to miss, like, the opening crawl stuff, because that's when people lose their minds. And I was like, it's such a cool experience. I couldn't stop thinking about, like, Phantom Menace, seeing that the first time. And I'll be honest, I was underwhelmed. Crowd response was like, there was, you know, people clapped and there were some cheers, but it wasn't that, like, hardcore, which.
Really?
I don't know. The Boston crowd, because I've gone a couple times since getting back to Boston, and they suck here. Like,
well, they're Patriot fans, so what do you expect?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
just so, kidding. Well, just kidding, people.
I'm fine with it. But yeah, so I don't know. I mean, what was awesome, though, like, regardless of the fact that it wasn't quite as great of a response as I wanted, as soon as that music started, though, and that opening crawl came up, I was just like, yes. You know, I immediately teared up, because it was just like, I can't believe this. I have no idea what I'm about to read.
Yeah.
So it was amazing. I just wish, like, the people were a little bit more excitable. And they were, but not, like, I don't know. I probably built it up too much. So.
Yeah, this was, like I said, mine was, it was a lot of cheering and clapping, which is kind of neat. And this has been a 3-year, you know, Chris, we've been, ever since 2012, we've been anticipating this particular moment, and this is just the beginning. But how was your experience?
Well, you know, you said that with 3 years, it's just kind of like, we were sitting in the theater, me and Scoop were sitting right beside each other. We ended up having 20 people that went with this particular group, and you know, most of it was Scoot's family, brothers, sisters, and stuff. My sister went, and one of my cousins was able to go with us at this time, and I was surprised. He was super, super excited. You know, I'm the Star Wars geek in the family. Nobody can top me. But for him to be as excited as he was kind of surprising to me. And I loved it. I loved the fact that he was so excited. But we were kind of – I was exhausted all week just from the excitement. I was just so wound up. And by the time – they actually let us in at 5 o'clock, and the movie didn't start till 7.
Yeah.
So we sat in the movie theater for at least an hour and 45 minutes. Waiting on the movie, and we just, you know, relaxed, chatting, getting excited. But with what normally has happened in the past with me, and this is kind of what I was expecting, soon as a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, everybody erupted, cheering, yay. And then, of course, when Han and Chewie showed up, everybody cheered. When Leia showed up, everybody cheered. When Luke showed up, everybody cheered. So that was, you know, it was a lot of fun. And everybody was pretty quiet, except for, you know, you miss stuff here and there from people laughing and stuff like that and people getting excited. So I didn't miss a whole heck of a lot, because I went back the very next day and I caught everything that I missed the next morning. But it was kind of, to me, I think it was my best experience as far as going to see a Star Wars movie recently with the modern day crowd. I still say, when I got to go see the premiere of The Empire Strikes Back, and then the first time I saw Return of the Jedi, those two experiences were probably the best as far as that I remember about the crowd not being the modern era and everybody going nuts. And like, this is the thing that's, you know, this is the thing to do, go see Star Wars, you know. And for me, the only movies I go to now basically are Marvel movies and Star Wars movies. You know, there's not really a whole lot of other movies that I'll say, I got to go watch that, because it'll be on DVD in 4 months. You know, I could watch it on Blu-ray, DVD, rent it, whatever. So, you know, most of the time I'm not too excited about going. Like you said, and being around the crowd, especially on the opening weekend. But for Star Wars, we got to, you know, you got to do that. And now after this weekend, I think I'm done with a big crowd. I just want to go when I see it, go see it and enjoy it and not deal with a bunch of crazy people.
You know what's crazy too is seeing this, the first trailer that played before the movie was a Star Trek trailer. And it was so funny because I'm looking at it going, oh, my gosh, man, what's up with this? And it was so funny. I got actually a pretty good laugh because I couldn't hold my tongue. As soon as the Star Trek trailer finished, it was dead quiet, right? And I yelled out, oh, it's not Star Wars. And the whole crowd started laughing because, I mean, we're all Star Wars fans. They're like, come on, you're playing a Star Trek today. Don't insult us with this crap. But no, it was, and here's the thing about when the first time I saw it, and people ask me, like, even now, even the last couple of days at work, like, hey, how was it? You know, what do you think? And I tell everybody this, like, first of all, go into it knowing that this is the first part of a huge journey. Go into it knowing that there's going to be a lot of questions you're going to have afterward. Okay, so don't expect that you're going to have just like it's going to be everything that everything rolled into one. This is a first part of a large journey. And then I just say, like, you know what? It was better the second time, and it would probably be even better the third time. I had so much fun, and I walked out of it the second time going, wow, that was really good. I mean, there's some things, of course, that, you know, all of the fans were going to have tiny little nitpicks of, and we'll talk about that in a minute here. But for the most part, I felt that the second time seeing it was even better. Did you guys have a similar experience, or did you like it right off the bat? Carl, go ahead.
I liked it right off the bat. I'm just curious. Did you guys have reserved seats at your theaters, or did you have to kind of like line up and hope to get a good? You did. Okay.
Same as Chris. I mean, they let us in an hour and a half earlier than the show. It was crazy. We sat in there for a long time. Go ahead.
Well, I've seen it three times now, and every time I've had the ability to reserve my seat beforehand, which say, especially going down, considering I walked in at 7:01, it was nice to know that I had a good reserved seat waiting for me. Yeah. I'm going tomorrow night again for the first time when it's not a reserved seat. But I feel like a Tuesday night, it shouldn't be too bad.
No.
But, so the very first watch through, I was like, wow, this movie is amazing. And I don't know if you guys did this, but I always did this with the prequels. I inevitably, when I'm going home, start re-ranking my Star Wars movies.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's done that.
And Force Awakens, like, after seeing it the first time, like, it was ranked number 3. After seeing it a second time, it was still ranked number 3. And then I went and saw it for the first time in IMAX 3D Sunday morning, and I came home, and it was number 2.
Whoa, so, it's climbing.
Yeah, so I don't think it'll overtake Empire. I mean, I'm Empire through and through, but you know, I left that movie and I already knew, like, I preferred it to all the prequels, and I like the prequels, but I think it's immensely better than all of them. Yeah. And I immediately liked it more than A New Hope. It just beat out Jedi after my third viewing. So,
nice.
I was hooked the first time. And seriously, you know, this is the thing is when I was a kid, and I'm curious if you guys did kind of the same thing, although you had more limited access when you were kids. But like when I first got into Star Wars, I had that, like, if I watched Empire Strikes Back at night, I would get up in the morning and watch it again at breakfast. Or same with Jedi, same with A New Hope eventually. Mm. This movie, like, when I went home the first time, I'm like, I want to go see that again tomorrow morning. And, like, that, I could sit down and watch this movie, like, on repeat. And I have not seen a movie like that in a long time. Like, even good movies that I've seen lately, it's like, okay, whatever, you know. Like, the new Bond film, it was good to see once, but I'm not itching to see it again. I could watch The Force Awakens when we hang up. I could watch it again in the morning. Like, it's that good to me. So I was hooked right from the get-go.
I was thinking the same thing on the way home. I was like, man, I wish I could go see it right now. It's like, I got to wait till the weekend to see it again. Chris, did you feel like on the second and third viewings that it got even better? Or were you, like I said, right on board the first viewing?
I was, my reaction, and I posted this on Twitter Thursday night, was, wow. Just wow. I mean, I really couldn't form any words. I didn't want to say anything too much. And I was just trying to wrap my brain around it. I mean, I was just blown away at how good it was. And, you know, and that night, of course, and I already knew, here, you know, I watched it at 7 p.m. Thursday night. Mm-hmm. And then I was already going to go to a noon showing Friday, and then I already had tickets to take my parents to the 7 o'clock Friday night. So basically I had, you know, 3 showings in 26 hours, and I couldn't wait to get to the second showing because I wanted to catch what I missed. Because there was a couple of things that I missed and that I know I missed. And I was like, I got to see. And there was just, you know, I was so excited to get back in there. And the second time I caught everything that I missed. And then the third time I was sitting there with my parents and watching them enjoy it, sitting beside them. And, you know, sometimes after you've seen it a couple of times, you kind of, you'll hit a few parts in the movie and it's kind of like a lull. Mm-hmm. And you're just kind of like, you kind of seem to get a little bored maybe for a few minutes. But this one, no. It was just, you know, I was so into the story and watching the story and every step of the story for me. It was better the third time than it was the second time than it was the first time. So for me, it just got better.
It keeps getting better. Okay. Yeah. And here's the thing about and why I asked that was because, like, the first time you see it, and it was like this with the prequels. It's just like the hype and the circumstance surrounding it is like you get like caught up in that. And it's sometimes it could be kind of hard to sit back and just concentrate and enjoy because there's just so much going on, you know, so much hype and everything. And you just got to get over that first initial watch it, you know, enjoy it as much as you can. And the second time I saw it, you know, in the IMAX, because I knew how the story was going to go. I knew the beats and all that. I could just sit back and really concentrate and really, really take it in and enjoy it. A lot more. So that's why I was asking about. Yeah.
You remember when we had our show and we talked about the first time we saw the Phantom Menace, and you said the same thing that I said, that when you first saw it and you came out of the theater and you were like, that was good, but that was different.
Yeah.
And to me, I had the same thought when I walked out because of that. I was thinking about that. Right. I was like, well, this is different, but it wasn't as different as the prequels were to me. You know, the prequels just, it was a totally different era in time. The whole, the feel of it, the style of it, everything was different. This one wasn't as much of a departure from the original trilogy as the prequels were to me.
Yeah. And let's not forget to say, like, this is JJ. He had, like, no wonder he kind of passed at first. Cause can you imagine, like, okay, it's time, you know, we want you to do it, and this is going to be in the sequel era, so you're going to have the legacy characters come back. So, oh, you got that to deal with. Oh, and by the way, you also have to deal with all the fans who didn't like the prequel, so you're going to have to appease them, too. So can you imagine, like, the pressure on this guy? Like, oh, my gosh, how am I going to deal with this? How am I going to do this? But we've gotten some interesting tidbits in the last few days about some of the story elements and how it came about, and we'll talk about that in a second. Let's jump into some of the characters, and then we'll get into maybe some things we didn't like, and we'll finish up. Characters, let's start off with, like, the main character, Daisy Ridley. Here is a person that, I don't know if you guys heard this, and I believe this is true, that, like, the first day on shooting, JJ said, hey, you know what? You're kind of, I don't know if he exactly used these exact words, but he said something about, you know, you're kind of wooden. You know, you need to, and this is her first film, and she's doing a Star Wars movie, right?
Right.
So he tells her, he gives her direction right from day one, like, hey, you know, you got to step up your game a little bit, or whatever he said. And she was really, really good. I really loved her. And let's talk about her character. I mean, I came out of the second and first viewings thinking that she is, as of right now, I think she is Luke's daughter. And the two reasons I say that, and I'll get your guys' take on this. First reason is what Maz Kanata said about the lightsaber. She said something to the effect of, you know, Luke had it and his dad had it before him, and now it's your turn, or something to that effect, right?
Now, she said, because this is one of the things I was focusing on myself. She said that was Luke's lightsaber, and it was Darth Vader's before his. Now it's calling to you.
Calling to you, right.
Right.
So that, to me, that's like, it's the Skywalker lightsaber. It's calling to you, a Skywalker. And the second thing was at the very end, when we got the reveal of Luke, there's a, you know, first Luke looks at her, and then she pulls out the lightsaber, and he has this look on his face something to the effect of, like, oh my gosh, you found it. You made it here. This is, you know, this is Rey. This is my daughter. She found my lightsaber, and it's time for her to finish her journey. That was another point of that I thought that, oh man, that's his daughter right there. So those are kind of the two things. And I know it's up for debate. We can debate this. Carl, what do you think?
Do I think she's his daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do, and I really hope so too. Mainly because if Kylo is the, and I know we'll get into him, but if he's the only Skywalker in the new story, my only concern is that it becomes a repetitive Vader story of like how he'll probably be redeemed. And I'm not saying he still won't be, and that'd be great if he does. I can't wait to talk about him too. But yeah, I really hope Rey is Luke's daughter. And initially, I never wanted Luke to have kids because, you know, we talked about this a lot, you know, over in the Wampusler. Uh-huh. And, you know, my initial hesitation was well, if Luke has kids, it's not because I don't want Luke to, like, be able to get married like the Jedi or whatever. It's just, I feel like he'd be too busy setting up a new order that he just wouldn't have the time to have a family. Mm-hmm. But, you know, seeing that we have Rey in the movie now, and once it was confirmed that she's not, at least we don't think, and I'd be shocked if she was Kylo's sister. I'm really hoping she's a Skywalker too. And kind of all the points you just made, Matt, you know, Maz Kanata makes it very clear that that lightsaber is calling to her. It's been, mm-hmm. it's clearly been dormant for 30 odd years, right? It hasn't been calling out for anybody else. It doesn't get excited until Rey shows up. And I think that's really a good point. And then the fact that the way Luke looks at her at the end of that movie, that he is,
yeah.
The emotionality in Mark Hamill's eyes and that Luke is experiencing in her presence is he doesn't just know her. He like, oh yeah, I think I know who this person is, or I had a vision of her in the Force. He knows who she is. It's his daughter. And I can't say enough about Rey's character. I read it. There's a really great article in one of the last Entertainment Weekly magazines, about her and John Boyega. And Daisy Ridley made a great point in the article about how, you know, she's going to be the first ever heroine in the Star Wars movie. And by the way, whenever I say heroine, I can't help but think of the drug.
All right. I know.
Yeah.
But, you know, Daisy really makes this great point about how, you know, because, you know, they say, like, Star Wars has kind of always been predominantly, you know, a male-friendly franchise. Not because we're trying to, you know, ostracize women, but, you know, it's always been male heroes, so it attracts, you know, typically young boys to young men.
Right.
You know, how are you responding to that? And she made this great point about like, well, my character, it transcends gender. It's just, she's going to be the new hero. So, and her story is broad enough to include, you know, all sexes, all races, all whatever, you know? And I thought that was a great point. And that really opened my eyes a lot more so that when I sat down the first time, I really could identify with Rey. I mean, I'll be honest, and hopefully this doesn't make me sound like a jerk, but I've always had a little bit of a problem identifying strongly with female hero leads because girl, how do I identify with this? But it's like, that's just stupid. Like, their story can still be relevant just because they're not the same gender as you. I've just found myself transfixed by her character. I mean, we're getting obviously a new hero's journey. She's a more believable character than little Jake Lloyd Anakin, who's a little boy. Like, there's not much to identify with there. Rey gives us so much to identify with, and Daisy Ridley is a phenomenal actress. Mm-hmm. I can't say enough about it. Like, her character by the end of that movie was my favorite character by far. And I find her character more compelling than Luke did in A New Hope. Lots of different reasons, but yeah, her character sold that movie. Not that it needed, it sold itself, but she is phenomenal. And I'm really hoping Rey is Rey Skywalker.
Yeah, me too. I like I said, the direction that she got early on set the tone, obviously, and throughout the movie, just total night and day from like some of the acting we got in the prequels. And you know, I like the prequels, but let's not beat around the bush. I mean, Carl, I know you feel the same way. Totally different vibe in this movie. Chris, convince you at all, or were you already convinced that she was she could be Luke's daughter?
Well, to continue with what you were just with what Carl was just saying about her being a strong character, and I'm watching this film, and I didn't really see her as being a girl. I didn't see Finn necessarily as being black, and I didn't see Poe as being Hispanic, so to speak. I mean, I thought they were all just fantastic, and her character. To me, when you were talking about lead heroines in movies, and, you know, girls have been hollering here lately, you know, in movies that they want to see stronger women. Marvel really hasn't done a great job with it. Black Widow really is about the only one right now, and she's just a tough chick. So, you know, to me, I kind of, when you were talking about that, it kind of reminded me of Sigourney Weaver in Aliens. Mm-hmm. This character kind of reminds me a little bit of that character. Strictly by what you were saying earlier, it kind of made me think of that. But, after I saw The Force Awakens the first time, I couldn't get that out of my head as, who is Rey? Who is Rey? That was the question. And after seeing it three times and thinking about it and thinking about it, I'll go with what you said, Matt, about Maz Kanata. There's a lot of, these are the reasons why I think she is Luke's daughter. We'll go with Maz Kanata first because I don't think Han realized who she was when they first met. Mm-hmm. But at some point between when they first met and he got to Maz Kanata, it registered with him who she was. Because at the beginning of that scene, Maz said, "Who is this girl?" when she got up and walked away. And then they cut to her walking away while Han tells her who she is. Then she comes downstairs and knows exactly who she is, says that about that was Luke's lightsaber, then his father, and now is calling to you. She at that point, she knew who she was.
Yeah.
So Han knew enough, recognized to know that that's who she was.
Chris, crushing it there.
The other thing that kind of, I am so embarrassed that I missed this the first time I watched the movie. It wasn't until the second time I watched the movie that it registered with me. Oh, my God. When Han and Chewie first show up on the Falcon, they're hiding down in that little hole. They pull the hole up. Han says something. Chewie says something. She responds to Chewie.
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of threw me because when Finn said, "You can understand that thing," I thought he was talking to Han.
Me too.
But he was talking to Rey, because Rey, when you watch it again, Han makes his comment, Chewie makes his comment. She looks directly at Chewie and answers him. She understood Chewie. And then, of course, later in the movie, I missed it the second time. But later in the movie, when they're on the Starkiller base, and Rey and Finn, they meet up again for the first, you know, rescuing her or whatever. They meet up on Starkiller base. And Chewie makes a comment, and she says, "He said that it was your idea."
Mm-hmm.
And that just kept, she understands Chewie. It just kept beating in my head. And then when they show, once she touches the lightsaber and they show some of the scenes in her head of what she's going through, then they show that shot of her being a little girl being left behind. She was old enough. She knew Chewie. At that point, she had been around Chewie enough to be able to understand him.
Mm-hmm.
So she grew up around Han, Chewie, and of course at this point, you know, being stranded and left alone, she's forgotten basically, you know, all the people that she was around, I think. I honestly think she knew Chewie, she understood Chewie because she knew him earlier, not just because she was on, you know, the planet. She understood some of those other foreign languages that were, you know, on Jakku. Well, of course, she lived there. Of course, she's going to learn to understand those. But we're just going to assume that, oh, she understands Wookiee because she's just, you know, good at it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's face it. In all the Star Wars movies, if I'm not mistaken, Han is the only one that understands Chewie that's not a droid.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm like, that's what cemented it to me is the Chewie. I'm like, she understands Chewie. Oh, my God. She was around Chewie when she was a little girl. And what you were saying too, Carl, and what Jay and Matt, what you were saying, I think that makes such more of a compelling story to have cousin against cousin in the future.
Yeah.
Of the story.
You know, yeah. Go ahead,
Chris. Oh, sorry. Well, Chris, I was just going to say, that's such a, I'd never even thought of that. The fact that, like, Matt says, "Tell me about the girl." And then, you know, we don't hear what Han says. And it's, you know, like, why doesn't he, as soon as you said that, I'm like, that makes perfect sense. And then I immediately said to myself, well, why doesn't he tell Rey? But it, to me, it's like Han's character is similar to the Obi-Wan character of A New Hope and somewhat similar to the Qui-Gon character in Phantom Menace, right? We always have these wise older characters in the first, you know, film of a saga or the trilogy. And it makes sense, like, just like Obi-Wan doesn't tell Luke the full truth because he's just not ready for it.
Right.
That's probably Han's thinking, like, this isn't for me to disclose to her. I don't know how I'm going to respond to it, right? That's for Luke to deal with, right. You know? So that makes perfect sense that he wouldn't, you know, Han's not the one to admit it to her.
Plus, sorry, go ahead.
No, that was it.
I was going to say, plus, when she shows up at the very end, when they, you know, after they destroy Starkiller Base and they show up, Leia's there to greet her, you could see on her face, Leia knows who she is.
Yeah, I know. That's a good point. And I think they did a good job of showing that she is not Solo, you know, but
right.
They, you know, they possibly know that, this is Luke's daughter. And we recently found out, guys, that the ages between her, she's apparently around 19, 20, right? And Kylo is around 29 to 30. So there's like a 10-year plus or minus whatever age gap between the two. And before we jump off Rey, just a couple more things. Chris, you mentioned the vision she had. I haven't seen this enough to I mean, I remember it, but there's so much going on in this thing. And of course, we found out that we've heard Ewan McGregor's voice. Obi-Wan is in her vision, as well as Yoda. And of course, they show the Knights of Ren. We don't know if that's a future vision we're seeing, or I'm assuming it's a past. And that's another thing. We'll get into that when we get into Kylo. But her vision, her like awakening, the Force awakening her with her vision there. Anything else? What did you guys see in that vision? I mean, any clues in that vision that you guys, Carl, that you see?
Any clues to?
As to like what, maybe what is going on with her or her lineage or?
Yeah, well, if you think about like, like Luke's vision and the cave on Dagobah.
It's kind of like a cave thing, right? Yeah.
Exactly. It's that experience. And it's, Luke is confronting like his kind of his inner demons. Rey's not at that point of her journey. And that's really cool because like the last thing we hear in it, which by the way, I didn't realize is a combination of Ewan McGregor and Alec Guinness, which I really am going to be attentive to tomorrow night. But they say, Rey, these are your first steps. Mm-hmm. I heard that line. I just didn't recognize that it was Alec and Ewan. So I want to be more attentive to that. But that's the thing. I don't think she's having the same type of, experience that Luke had, because it is her first experience of it. But, it starts off by her being in Cloud City. You know, what's up with that? There's obviously a connection to Luke and Vader. And then she sees Kylo Ren, who I think it's pointing to, this is your enemy. This is going to be your new enemy. And then she has, the vision of herself, being left on Jakku. So,
right.
I don't know. I mean, to me, it's what's really cool is that you hear Yoda and Obi-Wan. So in a sense, it's connecting her to the Force, right? Like the cosmic Force, these Jedi of old, Yoda and Obi-Wan, who are now one with the Force, are calling out to her. So the Force itself is calling out to her and inviting her forward on a journey. The ins and outs of what she sees, I mean, all we can do at this point is speculate, but
yeah,
my guess is it's just kind of, it's showing the danger. And this is the thing. The last time I saw the movie, there was a family sitting behind me and they had like a couple of younger kids. And the one little girl, I think, got very kind of freaked out by that scene because the mother took her out. And I could see that, right? Like, I mean, I'm an adult. It didn't bother me at all, but. It's a little bit scary for a Star Wars movie, much more so than the Luke in the cave thing. And I think that's the thing, you see Kylo impale somebody. I think it's the Force calling out to her, basically saying like, there is a very serious threat you need to help us, that you need to deal with. So that's kind of my interpretation of what that dream's all about. So it's calling her forward to deal with this new evil.
Yeah. I think the one thing that I got out of that vision, and I have to see it a couple more times to get everything, but I think the main thing was that she was left as a young girl, and it just kind of brings the story together for me. Like, we know, it says in there, we know, or actually Hans explains it, that Luke was training a new Jedi Order, and Kylo was one of the students, maybe one of the first students, because he's around 30 years old, right? He's 29-ish. So he was one of the first students, and after that fall, it looks like maybe he was training Rey, his own daughter, and at a point goes, just like, it kind of the history repeats itself, he goes, I got to hide her out because she could be the last hope, just like he was. So he hides her out, and she's having these visions of being left on Jakku, someplace where nobody can find her. And then for some, you know, a lot of people are speculating, like, he did like a force wipe on her for, to where at a certain point she's going to awaken. When she sees that lightsaber, everything's going to come kind of flowing back to her. Because how does she hold her own with Kylo Ren? Now, again, Kylo Ren was hurt, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But still, the stuff she does with that lightsaber against Kylo and the flip she does, you don't just pick up a lightsaber and do that, guys. She's had some training, and that's how I'm looking at it right now. Chris, what do you think?
I kind of think the same thing when I was seeing the images, and you know, you catch yourself when you're watching it, you want to try and catch all the images. And you just, it's kind of hard to catch them and digest what you're seeing because it's so quick. I want to know what the heck is that Luke in the R2, because we've never seen that before. Yeah. Of course, the Kylo Ren and the Knights of Ren is just some slaughter. But to me, it looked like everything she was seeing was traumatic events. Mm-hmm. Because you were on Dagobah. Kylo Ren, whatever the Luke thing was, and then her traumatic experience of being left behind. And I'm assuming, you know, what is the awakening? Is the awakening her? I kind of look at it like you said. She's had some training because that shot showed exactly how old she was when she was left behind. So she was old enough to do training because they started training Jedi that young.
Right.
And right. Yeah, we get to it when we get to more talking about the fight between her and Kylo and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've seen some people where, you know, and let me ask y'all this since we're on Rey. A couple of people, and we'll get to the lightsaber thing later, but I saw one particular person that had left his review about what he didn't like, say, we're just supposed to expect and understand that she all of a sudden can fly the Millennium Falcon even though she's never flown it, and that she can wield a lightsaber even though she's never been trained. And I'm like, well, she explains the Millennium Falcon thing when Han picks her up. Picks them up when he recaptures the Falcon. He makes a comment about something in the cockpit, and she says, "Yeah, I know, I didn't agree with it." So she worked on the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah,
she said it hasn't flown in years, but she worked on that Millennium Falcon. She knew it in and out as far as how it worked. So it wasn't that far fetched for her to fly it. And she actually, her reaction when she got through flying it was she couldn't believe that she could actually fly it.
Mm-hmm.
She just she just used the Force, even though she didn't know she was using it.
Well, use the Force. That's not how the Force works.
Great line.
Oh, you're cold?
That was my favorite.
You're cold? Yeah, that was my favorite as well.
Yeah, that's a great, and watch how Rey takes off, right? Like, she has a pretty sloppy takeoff.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's bouncing over. I love that, too, by the way.
She knows how to fly, but she probably hasn't really done it.
Right.
That thing's on its side. It's scraping the ground. It's bouncing. Yeah, it's pretty funny. I love that part. And the reveal of the Millennium Falcon. I mean, how great was that? You know, let's go take this piece of junk now. And it's you know, everybody. And that's another part of the movie where everybody started clapping. The reveal of the Millennium Falcon, a character in and of itself.
And my first reaction when they showed the Falcon was, I said this to Scoot. I said, oh, they got some explaining to do now. It's like, why is that Falcon sitting there?
Yeah.
And I think they explain it so well. That's the great thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like loose ends, I thought, got tied up very well.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. For sure. We'll get back to Rey when we talk about the lightsaber fight. Poe Dameron, guys, he was a character that I just read. JJ said when they asked Oscar Isaac to do it, they said, hey, you know, you're only going to be in it for a few minutes. I mean, you're going to die in the very beginning. You know, when the TIE fighter scene, that was going to be his last scene. And apparently JJ loved him so much that they said, you know what? We're keeping you in it. We're going to find a way for you to come back in. So that right there tells you how that this guy was going to be a fun guy, a good, great character. I thought he was great. Some comedy moments with Kylo, which was unexpected, but I loved it. And just his cockiness, his bromance with Finn. Yeah, I mean, everything about it, man. I thought it was a great character. What do you guys think of Carl, Poe Dameron? What's your thoughts?
Poe is, if I'm telling you, if I ever needed a wingman again in life, it would be Poe Dameron. The dude, I loved his character because he was literally the pump-up character. Right? I mean, yeah. He starts the movie. We watch all this horrible stuff happen. He gets thrown into Kylo's face. Who talks? I talk first. Yeah. You talk first. How does this work? You know, yeah. He was, you know, except for Rey, I loved his character most. And it's because again, like I just kept beaming every time he was talking, and because he's like that pump up character, but he's not cheesy about it either. He's real, but he's like, I don't know. He's just so, he's such a build me up. In the scene when, you know, Finn's breaking him out and he says, you know, we're going to do this. And he just smiles like, this is a dude that just got tortured, like force mind warped, you know, like he's just been through a little bit of hell, and yet he's just right on top of his game. You know, I can fly anything, you know, he is the new Han Solo in a small way. He's not like selfish like Han, but he's kind of got that cockiness to him that's backed up by clearly his skill. So I think that's the thing is, like, to me, Poe is like, he is like Han and Wedge combined, but obviously unique, you know? And I love his character. And, you know, my favorite thing about him too is the first time we see him interact with really another character, which is Finn. We basically see him give Finn a new identity, right? Like Finn sees himself as just a number in a system, but Finn gives him a name. Like that is such a, like that's, a, it's a simple moment, but it's like, it's so really iconic about the type of character Poe is. And then later in the movie, when he sees him, you know, he says, "You're a good man, Finn." You know, he's the build up character without being cheesy. He sees like the goodness in Finn. Like he gives Finn a sense of self, which I just think is awesome. Like, and Poe's just the man. Like, I want that dude to get my back in a fight. I want that dude to get my back picking up chicks. Like, he's the shit. Like, he's so cool.
Oh, no, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I knew like everybody was when Finn, I think Finn said he's dead, later on in the movie. I was like, no, he's not dead. He's coming. I mean, cause we saw shots of him flying.
Yeah.
So it was no surprise. I mean, some people in the theater.
I will say, I thought it was a little how they explain, like his escape is a little bit, right? Like, they do such a great job of tying up the 30-year-old questions, but some of this in movie stuff kind of had some loose ends. But
there's a couple of those. Chris, what do you think of Poe?
I loved Poe. I thought he was fantastic, and I wanted to see more of him. I was disappointed that we didn't get more of it. But I thought the way he explained it, he ejected from the TIE fighter and he woke up at night, you know, and the ship was gone and he was gone. I mean, that explains it to me.
I wasn't really okay. Thank you.
So you need to see it the fourth time then. I mean, everything that you said, Carl, he's just he's like a Han Solo type character, but he's not selfish. Right off the bat, him looking right at Kylo and just that line of, so who's supposed to talk first? You're supposed to talk. I'm like, what? I mean, you're talking to Kylo Ren here, this, you know, this bad guy. You're you know, popping off comedic lines here, and flat out in interrogation. Maybe you should rethink your techniques. You know, it's obviously it wasn't working, and you know, fun, just the way he played opposite of Finn to me was very good. That I'm gonna break you out. He said, "Can you fly a TIE fighter?" He said, "I can fly anything." He said, "Wait a minute, you need a pilot." "Yeah, yeah, I need a pilot. I can't fly." Yeah. So you know, it's just, you know, humor, and like you said, he's just cool, a cool customer the entire time. And the way he led the resistance, and you know, out in battle, you know, I mean, he was just the man. And I want to see more of him. I hope he has a bigger role in the next film.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, him and they showed some of his skills at the fight. At the, I guess it's, is it Tokodana that they fought?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Maz Kanata's planet. So yeah, they showed some of his skills in one scene where it kind of pans up and Finn's looking at him and like, wow, that guy's that's the best pilot I've ever seen. So let's talk about his buddy Finn. John Boyega comes into a massive role, and this guy, from the first time we met this guy, the actor himself, and how into this franchise he was and how excited it was. I mean, he's still right. I think it was yesterday. He was in New York, just showing up at theaters. Walking around giving high fives to everybody, and that's like the character of Finn. I mean, he's a He's fun. Comedy, you know, great comedy from him too. Some funny moments. And I love the fact that now we can see that this was his first battle. This was the first time he was, you know, he's been trained. Like he said, he's been trained from birth. I mean, they take these guys, these stormtroopers, just like Jedi. They take them and they condition them from birth or very young. And his first battle, his first time he has to go out and actually, you know, kill some people, he can't do it. And he's like, I'm done. I can't do this. This isn't what I signed up for. This is what I want. And from that, and I'm totally buying it. You know, these guys they're not clones anymore. This is just regular people that they snatch up. So they're going to have their own thoughts and stuff. So I love the fact that they did that with the writing and the fact that in the very beginning, Kylo's on to him. Like he can sense something is goofy with this guy. This guy's not right. But throughout the rest of the movie, his interactions with Han were great. His interactions with Rey, holding the hands when they're running and all that was funny. You know, his little romance with Rey, like he's trying to, you know, hey, you got a boyfriend? You don't have a boyfriend, dude. Stuff like that, you know, throughout the whole movie. And I'm assuming he's alive at the end. They said something about, I think at the very end, he's still alive. So he's messed up pretty bad, but he's still alive. So
yeah, we got a pulse.
Yeah.
You can hear like his heart beating, like, I think it's like the machine itself, but the machine, like when it's saying hi to him, like it's very clear. And when they first like unload him, you hear one of the medics say, you know, we've got a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Carl, what are your thoughts on Finn, John Boyega playing Finn?
I mean, this is, to me, he's the funniest character we've ever had in Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, I've never laughed so hard, except for maybe BB-8. But you know, he is great. You know, and I like that he is somebody who, it's to me, you know, the First Order. It sounds like ancient Sparta, right? Like boys are raised from a young age to be warriors. Yeah. It seems like it's all Finn has ever known. You know, and we even hear from, you know, General Hux a little bit later after he's, you know, gone AWOL that, you know, there's never been a sign of insubordination before. Nonconformity, I believe, is the word they use. So the fact that Finn is able to think for himself tells us that he's more than just your typical First Order Stormtrooper too, right? Like when he's rescuing Poe, he says, you know, why are you doing this? It's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, Finn's got a conscience. And that's the thing. Like, I like Finn's character. It's a similar story to Rey in the sense of like he's looking for some way of belonging. He's trying to uncover like who he is. So I like that. I like that, you know, Finn has character motivation and it's a very believable motivation. Like, you know, he's his whole life has been about one thing that now he realizes is just total BS. So he's looking for some sense of meaning and, you know, Rey kind of provides that for him. And then, you know, further at the resistance, you know, he finds meaning. And he obviously has a thing for Rey. I'll be interested to see where that goes, you know. I love the way he kind of like that little moment they have right before he's about to leave on to Takadana or however that you say it. Mm-hmm. He basically says, you know, you looked at me and then I, for the first time, I didn't feel ashamed of who I was, you know. So again, like there's a lot of like real human emotion and human discovery in this film. And I think Finn's another one of those characters. So, and the part, you know, oh, I'm in charge now, Phasma. I'm in charge.
Oh, yeah. That was great, isn't it? Kept calling him. What did he call him? What was it?
Oh,
he kept calling
him. Yo, Solo. Did you just call me Solo? Mr. Solo.
Yeah. Yeah. What was Han calling him, though? He called him, like, big guy?
Called him Big Deal.
He goes, because he calls.
Big Deal, yeah.
Big Deal in the Resistance. Okay, Big Deal.
You're calling him Big Deal. Chris, this guy, John Boyega, man, so much energy. We saw his Instagram accounts. I mean, he was so excited to be in this universe. Of course, now we know why. I mean, look what he gets to do. He gets to wield a lightsaber against Kylo Ren. Gets his butt kicked, but that's okay. What do you think about this guy?
He got his butt kicked by a stormtrooper
with
a lightsaber. You know, I was like, okay, this guy's just a great ambassador for Star Wars, and I was just so hoping that it worked. And I was very pleased. I was super excited. I love the character. He is basically scared to death, but he's not a coward. He knows what the First Order is capable of, and he's trying to get everybody else to understand how scared he is. And we need to run. but, you know, Ray wants to fight. Poe wants to fight. Everybody else wants to fight. And he wants to run because he knows the First Order better than anybody. But, and like Carl said, he is just absolutely hilarious. Some of the best lines. When Han starts, you know, nodding his head, he's like, what's that? What are you doing? I'm trying to come up with a plan. What are you doing? I mean, just so funny. Everything that he did played well to me. All of his lines played well. And of course, we'll get to BB-8 shortly.
Well, it's funny you said that because, well, to finish on Finn, I was thinking, like, where could they go with this character? Because it's, in a sense, he kind of lived out, or he did what he needed to do. He helped them take down Starkiller Base. But then I thought, well, you know what? I guess that's what he can do in the next movies. Is he still has a knowledge of the First Order that nobody else does, because he's been there since he's been a kid. Even though he's worked sanitation, he still made it to a stormtrooper. So maybe he's going to help out in future movies like that. We'll see. Chris, let's just talk about BB-8. I mean, Carl, is it possible that we found a new R2-D2? I mean, did he upstage R2 in some of the other movies? I think he might have. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Let's not forget what Han says, move, ball. when Jason and I were recording last night, I mentioned that, you know, I've always liked R2 and 3PO because they're a staple of Star Wars. They're iconic characters, but I like that they're there. I don't particularly love the characters, you know, but I love BB-8. He definitely, in my opinion, upstages them. You know, I couldn't stand R2 in the prequels because he became Inspector Gadget. I thought that stuff was ridiculous. So the fact that BB-8 is practical and cool and hilarious and sounds adorable, like, I loved BB-8. And this is the thing, like, I was saying, Jason and I were talking about, but I was saying to Jason that, like, what's really cool is when George Lucas first wrote these films, when he first started, you know, to write Star Wars, one of the questions he was grappling with was, you know, like, the relationship between human beings and technology. And it's funny because 3PO and R2 obviously have personalities. And there is certainly a level of humanness to them. To me, BB-8, even more so. You know, he's not just a droid. He is like a living, breathing character almost. I mean, when he finds out that Poe is, you know, he thinks Poe's dead, you know, when Finn's like, and his face just drops and he rolls off to be by himself, you know. You know, and I said the same thing is true about R2, you know, and the fact that he's in basically a depressed state.
Yeah.
Because Luke's gone. I mean, it's really interesting the like how much lifelike these droids are. They're not just machines. They have to some degree a consciousness. They have the ability to feel, right? Like BB-8 clearly has feelings. I mean, he's pissed when they first, you know, he calls out Finn like he's a traitor, and then he's like, shocking, you know. So yeah,
it's like what you do with Chewbacca and R2 is you don't need to have subtitles. You don't need for the characters to repeat anything he's saying. They just respond, and you know what's going on. And they did that perfectly with BB-8. I mean, one of the funniest things that happened in the couple times I've seen it was, at least the audience, when Finn gives him the thumbs up and BB-8 does it right back to him. I mean, that got a huge laugh. I mean, that was great. I mean, that was one of the funniest moments there. Let's finish up our new cast with my favorite.
I don't get to talk about BB-8.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you? My bad. Go ahead, Chris. Man, how did I cut you off on that?
I don't think he upstaged R2 really. I think they're like right neck and neck. R2 is, to me, it's just always been so fantastic. His relationship with Luke, and then I think his relationship with Anakin in the Clone Wars is just fantastic. But you're right, BB-8. I love the sound of his voice, the way they did the voice. It made him, when he was down, you know, you could hear it, you knew it. And like you said, but he was so funny, him bouncing around on the Falcon, and then finally he just shoots out the cords or whatever to hold him in air so he wouldn't keep, you know, bouncing all around the Millennium Falcon. But like you said, the two funniest things for me was when he did the, Ben did a thumbs up and he did that back, but when Ray was looking for, this just kind of really cracked me up, when he was looking for the part for Ray, she says, right there. And he's like this. He says, no, I'm pointing. No, no. And BB-8 just kind of rolls over there and just sticks his eye right on it. He's like, there. And he doesn't even see it. So, yeah, he was, I wish we could have had more. He, to me, I mean, we had a good bit of it, but I want more BB-8. He was just such a cool new droid, and I love the fact that he went up to R2 because he was wanting to get R2's help. So he knew who R2, I guess, basically knew the capabilities of R2-D2 or, you know, whatnot. But I really enjoyed what little bit of relationship Poe had with BB-8. That first interaction with them, you knew that they had been together and they had a strong relationship.
Yeah.
So now moving on to the next thing.
I thought that, man, I was watching it and like, man, all the toys that had come out and they were really promoting BB-8, and man, he sure lived up to all the hype that everybody was talking about. Like I said, my favorite character of the new bunch, Kylo Ren, Adam Driver came in, and it was no surprise to me that he was going to be Han's son. I mean, he kind of looks like him, you know, the same kind of wavy hair. And I kind of figured that a long time ago when they first announced him as a cast member. But wow, the character of Kylo Ren, I'm a sucker for a good bad guy, right? I love a good bad guy. And I thought he was great. Just the fact that Rey says, I can't remember exactly what she's basically saying, you're no Vader. And the fact that he is so obsessed with being as good as Vader, as good as his grandfather, that we find out fairly early in the movie that he's, Han and Leia's kid. And like I said earlier about his training, obviously he was one of the first, had to have been one of the first, going by the age, he had to be one of the first pupils of Luke. And maybe this is obviously where we're going with this trilogy is, Luke failed as a teacher, and he's trying to deal with that right now, and that's why he's kind of gone from the galaxy. Like, come on, his best friend and his sister, he's training their kid, and in whatever fashion, whatever reason, he falls to the dark side, and he is, man, this kid is messed up, man. He is a mental case. Anybody that goes crazy with the lightsaber and destroys everything, you know he's crazy. And his interactions with Han, one of the obviously the big moments, his interactions with Han, I mean, he's crying. And everything about this character, I can't wait to find out where this goes and how powerful he gets. I mean, he showed some pretty powerful stuff with the Force. I mean, he's able to hold a blaster bolt for a while before letting it go in the Force. Usually you see, like, Vader, they have to concentrate. They have to point their hand at it. He didn't have to do that. He just holds that lightsaber bolt for a while he's talking to Poe. His Force push against Rey at the very end. His Force pull, and when he chokes one of his minions, you know, and he brings him to him when he finds out about the girl in quotes. Geez, what else? I mean, there's just so many great things with him. And of course, the lightsaber battle. And you can see that he is very powerful in the Force, but lightsaber combat, he's still kind of on, you know, like kind of like the, not the beginner stage, but he's still got a lot to learn. And just the fact that he was able to, Finn was able to kind of battle him for a little bit. I mean, Kylo had him pretty well, but the fact that he was hurt, I think a lot of people are forgetting this. He got a blaster bolt to this gut from not just a blaster, Chewie's. I mean, you saw what that thing was doing to the stormtroopers. I mean, it was blowing these guys 10, 20 feet back when they were getting hit. Chewie shoots him, and I don't know if Chewie went for a kill shot or if he just wanted to hurt him. I don't know. We can debate that. But he was hurt. He was bleeding. And another part that I loved about this character, when he's fighting in the snow, I don't know if you guys probably caught this, a few times he would hit himself like, trying to pump himself up, get him, maybe feel the pain to get that, you know, just to get that rage going. I love when they do that. Love that. Hitting himself. And then, of course, you know, the very end with him and Rey. And he has a link to Rey. We know this because he felt her. When he found out that it was a girl, automatically he's intrigued, like, whoa, what? So there's something with these two that I can't wait to find out. So definitely my favorite character, and I can't wait to see what happens with him, assuming he made it out of Starkiller Base. I mean, hopefully he did, him and Hux. Carl, what did you think of Adam Driver as Kylo Ren?
He was the character I was most excited to see and learn about. I was surprised how quickly we learned that he's Han's kid. You know, like
when it was quick. Huh?
It's like maybe a half hour, 40 minutes into the movie. You know, it's pretty clear. And like you said, Matt, I kind of suspected that anyway. I figured one of the new main characters, if not the villain, would be a Han and Leia offspring. I loved his character. And what's really interesting, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and he made a great point. He said he's kind of the anti-Luke Skywalker. Because, right, like, Luke's whole journey to the Jedi is, like, you know, resist the dark side. Don't be tempted by the dark side. And here is Kylo saying, the Supreme Leader can tell that I'm tempted by the light. Right? So he's being tempted by the light side. We've never seen that. You know, what an interesting little point. And right before, you know, he kills his father, hopefully everybody's seen this movie.
spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. I think he is sincerely like struggling with part of him wants to do it and part of him obviously doesn't, you know? So we've never had a villain like this. You know, when Vader strides onto Tanith 4, he's your black and white bad guy in A New Hope. He's your black and white bad guy in Empire, and even for, you know, the first half of Jedi. You know, there's that conflict doesn't really exist until Jedi for Vader. You know, and so this is a very new type of villain, that he is a villain who wants to become more villainous because he's tempted by the light. So I think, Kylo is, and he's extremely powerful. You know, and I like that you brought up, Matt, you know, we see all new force powers from him, which I think is really cool. I wish they could have thought to do something like this with Yoda and the Emperor in Revenge of the Sith instead of just making it a lightsaber duel. But that's for another. I think that was so cool that he, but he still does need to be trained, right? Like Snoke says to Hux, go get him. I need to complete his training. Yeah. You know, obviously Rey's going, I made this comment, to Jason, but like, so it seems like in episode 8, you know, Kylo's going to be getting some more training from Snoke. And Rey's probably going to be being trained by Luke. I wonder if we're going to get a Rocky IV montage of them training and getting pumped up. You know, for the
montage.
I think Kylo is a great villain. I thought his temper tantrums were, at first I thought they were kind of odd, but after seeing it a second time, I like it. You know, he's not, we don't want him to be the exact same as Vader, right? Like, well, he's upset, so he's just going to kill somebody. Like, he's unstable and he's young and like, he's just unstable, and I really liked that. I think his character is really compelling, and what's interesting is the fact that he wears that mask. He doesn't need it. You know, he's obviously emulating Vader, but he doesn't need the mask. It doesn't, you know, it's not for life support. I think he wears it to be intimidating and because he can hide behind it, right? Like, when he takes that mask off for the first time with Rey, you know, she immediately starts to break him down, and we see how he gets so emotional. We can see it in his eyes, and I think Adam Driver does a great job of acting that. So it's really cool to think that, you know, he is kind of exposed with the mask off. So to him, the mask is a comfort because it allows him to stay in the dark, which I think is a really cool part of his character. And I think at the end of the day, what makes me most excited is we don't have a villain of the day like we did with the prequels, right? Like, it's pretty apparent that Snoke and Kylo and Hux, but specifically Kylo and Snoke, are the new two big bad guys, and it's not going to be like in the prequels where we had Darth Maul and then Count Dooku and then Grievous. You know, these Kylo specifically has plot points, and that's why, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this, that lightsaber duel, it's why you give a crap. You know, like, a lot of the lightsaber duels in the prequels, like, while they look great, there's no like emotional conflict, there's no trajectory to the battle. It's just two people trying to kill each other. That lightsaber duel with Kylo is like, there's so many subtle motivations that make his character so much more compelling. So I can't wait to see what else comes of him. And I think Adam Driver is like, he killed it. Like, he was great at it. So
I think you're exactly right about the helmet thing. I think that is a thing where he wants to hide himself because he tells it to his dad, Han. He says, you know what? I'm struggling. I'm, I'm getting called to the light side. And I think you're exactly right. I think that helmet is a way for him to hide. And so other people, and maybe he exposes himself to Snoke, but maybe just around, like you could see like the anguish and the torment that's going on. I mean, he breaks down in front of his dad and in front of Rey. He's not able to hold himself in. So I think that helmet does hide some things for him, and that's why he wears it. Chris, what are your thoughts on Kylo?
Real quick, sorry, Chris. I just think it's cool that his name's Ben too. That's the only thing that's in the movie. You know, with the fact that his name is Ben, because you know we obviously had Ben Skywalker in the EU. So I thought, you know, it's interesting that they don't. I'm glad they didn't name him Jason like Han and Leia's kid in the novels. So,
well, speaking of really Ben. I kind of thought that was a little odd, calling him Ben, because Leia never met Ben, and Han just briefly knew him. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, so did Luke? Luke was the one that named him. So you know, that's just kind of way I looked at it. So he had the big influence about naming the kid, in my opinion. But anyway, which could
be an interesting point, Chris. You know, if Luke is the one who kind of suggests the name. It's clear that Luke probably from his birth had a very special connection to his nephew. So how much more heartbreaking when he turns.
Right. You know? And y'all were mentioning, I kind of think, Luke will, you know, Luke went away to hide when he failed with Ben or Kylo. And so now hopefully he'll get to redeem himself through Rey by training her to either defeat Kylo or turn him back. But, you know, I really did like Kylo Ren's character. I thought when you first see him, that first scene, he just nails it. And I love the sound of that voice coming through that mask.
Yeah.
To me, he's very raw. It's like, to me, I keep picturing an open nerve, a raw nerve, because that's kind of like what he is. He's a bad guy. But he's terrible at it. I mean, he can't control himself. He's obviously mentally challenged. He's got some mental issues. He wants so desperately to emulate Darth Vader. I mean, that's clear with what you said, why he has that's probably the biggest reason he has that mask is because he wants to be like Vader, because he's got the mask there in his little chamber. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of crazy when he's sitting there talking about that by himself, talking to Vader, show me the dark side. You know, most people would be, show me the light side. Let me calm down. You know, show me the what I could do that's good or what. He wants just the opposite. He wants to be nothing but, he wants to be Vader. And then to have Rey push his buttons when he's trying to draw out the information from her head and she's fighting him back. Mm-hmm. When he's in the chamber. And she's got her tied up in the torture rack or whatever. And I think there is where she starts to open up more with the Force, because she's just fighting him. I think she's just fighting him for, you know, doing everything she can to fight him. But she doesn't realize that she's actually using the Force, because, and then to come up and say, you're afraid that, you will never be as strong as Darth Vader. And well, let's face it, Darth Vader would break him in half in a heartbeat with the way he is right now. Because him losing his temper twice like he did, you know, I mean, totally just, I mean, going berserk. And that's something we've never seen in Star Wars, somebody just lose it like that. And I love the two, when he, at the beginning, when he grabbed Poe with the Force and just paralyzed him, and he did the same thing with Rey. That's something else we've never seen. I mean, just freaking just paralyzed him with the Force. And it just like, man, so he is good and strong in the Force, but he can't control his own self. Mm-hmm. Because you could kind of see the little bickering back and forth between him and Hux, especially when towards the end when they're in there talking to Snoke, and Hux just kind of like, kind of chastises him a little bit in front of Snoke, and he's like, look, I can break her if you just teach me and show me how. And you know, I wondered when I first saw it, I missed this. I wondered, okay, did Hux get away, or did Kylo get away off of the Starkiller base? But when I saw it the second time, I caught what Snoke actually said to Hux the last time Hux went in. He said, retreat, get off the base, and bring me Kylo. I have to finish his training. So I'm going to assume that they got away.
Yeah. So, that's one thing that kind of I would have liked to seen something. I mean, we're just supposed to assume that they made it out, but you could, like in A New Hope, we saw Vader spin out and then he rides his TIE fighter and he flies off. There was nothing in this for Hux, Kylo, or Phasma about how they made it out. I guess we're just supposed to assume that they made it out. I would have liked some. That's one of the nitpicky things that I'll talk about in a minute. Like, I kind of wish we got something right there, showing them get off, Chris. But
right.
And another thing, how does he know? Here's another thing that's, and maybe we'll find out about this in future movies. How does he know about Vader? And even Rey knows about Vader. Did Luke talk about this as a training tool to these new Jedi, to this new Jedi Order? Like, hey, you're going to be tempted like my father was tempted and actually turned to the dark side. You know, this is what happened. This is what he did. This is what he looked like. He was the most powerful Jedi ever. His midichlorian count was blah, blah, blah. So, you know, did he get into all that? Did he get into that? And that's how they know. And that's why Kylo or Ben at the time, Ben was so enamored with, oh, my grandfather was the greatest. I want to be just like him. I want to be just like my grandfather. I don't want to be like my dad who was a smuggler. I want to be, you know, of course, it turns out to be a great general and all that. But, you know, I want to be like the greatest Jedi of all. I want to be like my grandfather. I have the genes in me. Why can't I do that? So that's one of the things I wonder about. Like, how does he know? And are we going to get that in the movies? Or is that going to be a book or whatever? That's just something that's kind of been gnawing at me. Like, I want to know. How does he know about Vader? So anything else before we jump off of Kylo? I mean, well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the obviously the big thing was, one of the big things was, not only finding out that he was a Solo, and one of the great moments of this was when Han Solo calls out to him and yells Ben, and it was dead quiet, and it was like, oh my gosh. And of course, as soon as I saw him walking, I knew this was the end of Solo. I mean, right. It was pretty telegraphed. I mean, I'm sure you guys knew what was coming at this point.
Before you go further, can I say something? I want to ask you a question. It has to do with this. This is something that I have wondered watching the movie. Did J.J. Abrams do this on purpose? When Leia first showed up, she steps out of the ship, and she just looks at Han. Nothing is said for a few seconds, several seconds. And then the same thing with Han. He calls Ben. Now, did J.J. do this on purpose with Leia because he knew the crowd was going to cheer? So he gave it a few seconds before anything was said because he knew that people were going to get excited. And with the Ben thing, did he do it on purpose by when he hollers Ben and starts to walk out there? Is that his way of preparing you because you know what's happening? Because as soon as he said Ben, like you said, and started to walk, I'm like, ugh, he's going to kill Han.
Yeah. Well, so, I knew before. I mean, when I saw this scene setting up, and you could see Han, like, he was looking, and he was looking at his son, and I'm like, oh man.
With that dialogue and that whole scene, you're kind of preparing yourself for what's fixing to happen because you know it's going to happen.
Yeah, and I did think they did a pretty good job of, like, for a minute there, you think, wait a minute, like, he's actually getting to his son Ben. I mean, when he's standing there talking to him, and you can see the tears coming in, like, you know, he's fighting the light side, and it was all kind of juxtaposed with the light of the Starkiller base kind of slowly going away. And for a minute there, I thought he had him. Like, whoa, wait a minute. This is like a total turnaround. I thought he was going to kill him, but maybe he's not. So they had me for a second there. And then as soon as that darkness shade, that the shroud kind of came down, and you see his face turn, I'm like, yep, okay, I guess I was right. Here we go. So telegraphed it was. For a second they had me, you know, rethinking it, but ultimately he does kill his dad, and the only problem I had was with this, guys, was like, you know, this is Han Solo. I wanted just something. I mean, it was a great death, but like, he didn't even get to get buried or anything like that. That's the only thing. I'm like, oh man, I'm bummed, you know, because like, he just falls down and there's really nothing else left. I mean, sure, Leia kind of feels him and she kind of scrunches over and everything, but that's all we got. And I was kind of like, kind of bummed a little bit that we didn't get at least we didn't get to like to say goodbye to Han. It was just, oh man, I don't know. Do you guys, What did you feel, Carl, about his death scene?
I'll be honest, man. All three times I've seen that movie, that scene makes me cry. Like,
yeah.
Like hard.
Yeah.
I'm incapable of not reading spoilers, so I knew he was going to die like a year ago.
Yeah.
Then I'm saying that with like arrogance, but like I can't stay away from spoilers, and I almost hate that. So I knew that was going to happen. I knew it was coming. Yeah. Even towards the end, like there was a few other quick spoilers that are like, well, maybe it's not Han, it might be Chewie. And it's like, nah, if Chewie died, like we'd care, but not the same way. It's pretty clear to me, especially, you know, when he yells out Ben, which by the way, to me is one of the, it's one word, yet it's one of the way Harrison is not in that film. But and the fact that it is complete silence is, it allows it to echo in your head, just like it echoes in that huge room. Mm-hmm. Watching Han die was, you know, at first, you know, I was like, the first time I saw it, I figured Kylo was actually just toying with him. He never felt tempted. But then, like, the second and third time I saw it, it's like, no, he is sincerely, like, struggling with this. And
see,
it is.
That's what I wanted to know. That's what I wanted to know, because I think he was really tormented. And a lot of people were saying, like, no, he was just acting. He was just trying to goad Solo to get closer. So you think the same thing. Okay, I'm glad you said that. So,
I think he was really struggling with it.
Yeah.
You know, like, that scene where he's talking to Vader's helmet, he says, you know, like, show me the power of the dark. I know what I have to do. Snoke needs to see something. Basically, this is his opportunity. And, like, what he says to Han, like, I need help. Can you help me? And poor Han's thinking, like, yeah, absolutely. I'll do anything.
Yeah, key to the word right there. I'll do anything.
Exactly. Yeah. So he holds out that lightsaber, and then when he's not letting go, like, Han, and you can see, I love that zoom in of their hands. Like, Han is trying now to pull it away from him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and JJ does a great job with that, right? Like, it goes dark, and that allows Kylo. Kylo can now hide back in the darkness because his helmet's off and do what he thinks he has to do. And, you know, I wasn't disappointed at all. I was just heartbroken because when Ben Kenobi died in 1977, yeah, I wasn't there, but I'm curious what you guys thought. I don't think it has that emotional weight just because, like, I'm sure everybody, like, cared. Like, you're kind of bummed. Like, oh, man, he was such a great character. I felt that, like, when Qui-Gon died in episode one, it was like, I was like, oh, man, he was my favorite character in the movie. Mm-hmm. But the thing with Han Solo is Han Solo has existed for 38 years, and people love him. You know, they love that character. So the emotional weight of losing him is far more than a character you met for the first time. Mm-hmm. So, like, when Han died, and specifically when he plummets to, like, into the abyss, that actually is what really made me like break down and start bawling, because it's like, oh my God, that is my favorite character who we will literally never see again.
Yeah.
We don't get to marry him. He's not going to be a Force ghost. Harrison Ford's up Star Wars. and he went out with a bang for sure. Like when he just falls like that, there is such a finality to it that to me hits you even harder.
Yeah.
So that look of shock on his face when he gets impaled. It's just like it just crushes you, and then to watch him fall like that just that gave like that note of finality.
Yeah.
How did you guys respond? Like, Chris, what did you think of that? Like, when Han died, did you see it coming?
I didn't know anything that he was going to die or anything. I didn't read spoilers, so I didn't know. But I thought that if anybody did, it would be him. I had kind of made peace with it before I went into the movie that we could lose one, if not more, of the original cast. And as soon as he said Ben and started to walk, I knew it was coming. So I had that time to prepare. I was just stunned. And what really kind of got me was when Chewie went berserk.
Yeah.
I thought he had sacrificed himself, because it's like, how in the hell is he going to survive that from where he was? And then I was just, it took me completely out of the movie for a few minutes. I don't even know what happened right after it, the first time I saw it, because I was just stunned with, oh God, we lost Chewie too. I was just, you know, just totally stunned with no emotion. And it took me a minute to get back into it. But seeing Chewie at the end in the Falcon was just like, oh, thank you. But then seeing him cry at the end, sitting there, the last time you kind of see him sitting there with his head down and just kind of, he's feeling pain and everything, you know, he's hurting. You talk about the interaction between Han and Kylo. When he says, I know what I have to do, I don't think I have the strength to do it. I think Han is thinking one thing. Han is thinking the good thing, but he is thinking, I have to kill you.
Right.
Is what I'm, was what I got out of it. That's how I read it. He was tormented. He didn't want to feel the torn, the between the pain, the, you know, what was tearing him apart. He felt that if he killed Han, that that would fix it. Mm-hmm. And of course, it didn't. But, you know, it's really hard to sit there and think, you know, that Han's now gone. But I don't think they'll kill off all of them, but, you know, I think they had to kill somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was kind of hoping that it wasn't like Han and Chewie and the Falcon going, you know, and we lose all three. You know, yeah. We lose Han, Chewie, and the Falcon. Are you kidding me? But, yeah. I mean, the way it happened, I mean, it's gut-wrenching, but I was so spent. I had literally had stunned and no emotion whatsoever. You know, my sister was bawling. You know, she was sitting right down in front of me at the time, and I think everybody else was just kind of in shock. I know after my mom and dad, we went and saw it. They said it was great, except for the fact that Han died. So...
Yeah. Yeah, I think part of it was the reactions from, you know, from Rey and Finn and, of course, Chewbacca. I mean, like you said, I mean, he had, you know, that growl. You can feel so much anguish and pain and anger in that. Just put that scene over the top with you know, that's his best friend. They've been together for so long. Even in the fact that after Han and Leia, and let's talk about.
Oh, wait one second, right quick. Yeah. With what you said, Carl, when you asked about Obi-Wan dying, when I was 7 years old, I remember that was quite a shock, and it was quite painful for me at seven. I remember it was quite a shock because, to me, I saw him as a father figure to Luke, so it was really hard on me the first time I saw it. I was just like, whoa, what? You know, as a seven-year-old, it was kind of traumatic for me.
Yeah,
first time. But.
And that's the same thing that happened with that. It kind of mirrored with Luke's reaction to seeing Obi-Wan that screaming no is like, oh man, it's like hit you. Since we're talking about you know, Han Solo and his death, tell you what, I think you know, Harrison Ford, he anchored this movie, and he went out and he was like. Back to being Han Solo again. I mean, he put everything into this. And I know lately Harrison has been kind of like a curmudgeon, and he doesn't really, you know, promote his movies that much. And he kind of just goes and he does a good job. But in this one, it's just like, obviously he knew this was the last time he was going to do it. He put all his effort into it. Everything was great with him. Like the comedy, his interactions with Carrie Fisher.
I thought she was great too. I thought she just dropped right back into Leia.
Yeah, she both of them together. I mean, one of the coolest moments was the moment that she comes out and sees Han for the first time, and you know, like the story makes sense. Like, of course, this is why they're not together. Their son fell to the dark side, and that happens a lot of times in the day and age we live in, when something traumatic happens, especially if you're married or you're, you know, whatever, your significant other, and a traumatic experience happens with your kids. Hey, I've seen it many times where it breaks up the family. There's just so much, you know, that happens between, you know, the parents. And I could totally get this story element of that just broke them apart. You know, they lost their son and it broke them apart. And I can totally see that. So, but, like I said, I totally thought he anchored this movie with the comedy and just him coming back to the role. I mean, he nailed it. Carl, what do you think of Harrison Ford finishing out his stint as Han Solo?
Yeah, I think this is probably my favorite Han Solo movie. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he is one of the main stars in a way that he wasn't in well, yeah, he was. Whatever, doesn't matter. But yeah, he's great. You know, he's funnier than ever. There's a wisdom to him that's obviously new. You know, and then, yeah, he's so good in that role. I love it. Like, I love that they made, you know, I was one of the people, like, when we heard that, you know, the rumors that Han and Leia weren't together in the movie, my initial response was like, oh man, that stinks. Cause like, you kind of want that happily ever after.
Yeah.
Then it's also like, but I also get that, right? Like, I you know, these things happen in life. So, but I just wanted it to be good. And it was great. You know, like you just said, Matt, like, it makes perfect sense that something like as traumatic as is their son Ben falling to the dark side and killing the new Jedi Order, you know, in a sense.
Yeah, right.
To probably put a lot of strain on them. And I love when Han and Leia have that moment where Han says, we both needed to deal with it in our own way. I went back to the only thing I was ever any good at. You know, I love it. It makes it so believable. Like, they never stopped caring about one another. They just couldn't be around each other because they just need to deal with that in their own way. So I thought that was really an adult way of progressing the characters. And also, like, action-wise, this is, like, the most action-packed we've really ever seen Han since, like, A New Hope. You know?
Right.
He's running around with his blaster, using Chewie's bowcaster. I like this thing. And he is he's kicking butt this whole movie, which I think is great. And he's doing that at 72 years old. Like, that's
I know. It's crazy. Yeah.
I absolutely love his character in the movie. Can't say enough about him. And also another little moment that like kind of, I don't think I've ever smiled as big and cried so hard at a movie as I did this movie. And the big cry was when Han dies. The big smile is when he walks onto the bridge into the cockpit of the Falcon. And there's just that quick little moment, and you know, we hear a little bit of the Rebel fanfare as he's just smiling with his hands stretched out over the two, you know, pilot and co-pilot seat. Cause it's not overly cheesy. It's perfect. He obviously has been looking for the ship for a while. And so I like that too. Like, they make sense of the fact that, like, somebody stole it from him and then it got stolen a couple more times and it's been shut down. So, like, he couldn't track it anymore. And he even says to Chewie, like, ah, oh, I knew we should have checked the Western region or whatever. Like, they're clearly looking for it. So I like that. But, you know, when, like, Han stands on the bridge, like, into the cockpit there, like, that just, like, made me beam so big. And then when he's first brings up, you know, like, they're trying to convince Han to help them bring BB-8 to the Resistance. They're like, he has a map to Luke Skywalker. And Finn says, you are the Han Solo. You know, you knew Luke, right? And he goes, yeah, I knew Luke. And the way Harrison delivers that line, it's so perfect. Because it's like, there is this sentimentality, like, Han misses his old friend, and you see it in his eyes. Like, there is a sadness that his friend is gone. So I thought that was great too. So, like, you know, all of these, like, the big three relationships, they've been broken up, right? Like, Han, Luke, and Leia are not together at this start.
Yeah.
But it's so, you know, they make it believable as to why, and yet you see the anguish and all, and specifically Han and Leia, you know, like, they obviously missed that. They missed that little family they had. So I thought that was really well done.
Yeah. Well, one of the major points, or one of the great scenes was, and we saw it in the trailer, was his explanation to Rey and Finn, like, yeah, all of it was true. And, like, when you saw that in the trailer, like, oh man, he is back. I mean, he is totally on board, and he epitomizes, like, Han Solo, that's him. I mean, we all saw, like, man, that was him. That was, you know, it wasn't like Indiana Jones 4 where it seemed a little on the odd side, you know? I don't know what it was, but he just looked great. All his lines were great. I mean, he just nailed it. Chris, what do you think?
You know, I was one of the ones that I'd heard about them not being together, and I was totally against them not being together. I'm like, no, they were together at the end of Jedi. They should be together. But this story made perfect sense of why they're not together anymore. They lost their child. He didn't die, but they, in a sense, they lost their child. So, like you said, Matt, and like you said, Carl, that's one thing that a lot of marriages cannot survive is the loss of a child.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, and it, like you said, he played this beautifully. I thought he was money in this movie. And I'm so glad we got that moment that you were talking about in the Falcon cockpit when he first go, you know, they get back on there and he goes in the cockpit, just that little sideways smile. It's just like, yes, that's Han. And just his comedic delivery when he's arguing between the two groups of bad guys that are on the ship. And he's just like, well, what was the second time? And he's just got this fumbling way about him, and Chewie, you know, shaking his head in the background and stuff, and you know, but they, and I love the fact that when Chewie was hurt, he made that comment to the effect of, "If you hurt him, you got to deal with me." Talking to Finn, and so I love that. I love their connection between. He loves Leia and he loves Chewie two totally different ways, but he loves Chewie like nothing else.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that they've been connected for so long, and now I think Chewie and Rey will be connected. They'll be like buddies for a little while. Mm-hmm. I hope that he's a part of her life.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about Han, let's talk about Leia too. Chris, I agree with you that I thought she looked great. I think that it does show that she hasn't acted in a while. I think she, as far as the whole cast, I think she was the one that probably had the hardest time in some of her deliveries. I mean, I thought she looked great. Some of the moments with her and Han kind of brought you back to that old, you know, the old stuff we got from the original trilogy.
Yeah.
But I did think that she kind of, you can kind of tell that she really doesn't act anymore, and it's more about her, like her one-man show or whatever it is. But Carl, what'd you think of her? Or Chris, go ahead.
I was gonna say, you know, I agree with that, but I think she was believable that this is what Leia would be like at this age.
Yeah.
To me.
Right. Carl, do you have any issues with her as far as her acting was or anything like that?
Yeah, the only thing I thought that was weird for her, you know, the only thing I felt like she acted weird with, and it's, I don't know if it's so much Carrie Fisher as it was like the awkward dialogue. But then she's, you know, when she says to Han, you know, like, you know, Han says, you know, there's too much Vader in him when they're talking about, obviously, the, you know, what, how their son fell. Mm. And she says, no, it's not that. It was Snoke. He seduced him to the dark side. It's such a hollow line. But to me, it's like, it just made me think of like what Harrison and Carrie used to say back in the 70s up to George, like, you can write this stuff, but you can't say it. You know, because that is, that's a weird thing to say. Like, imagine walking up to somebody and being like, no, Snoke made him fall to the dark side, you know? Like, that's a weird line. It's a weird name, Snoke, and like, fall to the dark side, right? Like, that's not normal language of speech. So I thought that, that line sounded kind of weird, but it's a little bit of a combination for sure. Like, you can tell she hasn't acted in a while. But I think more than anything, it's just an awkward line. So, I think Carrie Fisher did great because she didn't have to say much. When she did speak, 90% of the time it was great. But her visual acting was great. She did an awesome job, right? Like, kind of doing the slow, like, falling to her butt, you know, feeling Han's death.
Yeah.
The way she looks at Han when she first comes out of the ship is phenomenal. You know, like, visually.
That was a great moment. Yeah, that was a great moment.
Yeah.
That was one of those lump. That was the one time where I did feel a little like, you know, it just kind of got to me. I was like, man, this is the first time they've seen each other, and we've seen him in so long. It was just, that was a great, great moment. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think it's interesting. I'm curious what you guys thought of this, too. She's not a Jedi, right? Like, it was pretty clear at the end of Return of the Jedi that Luke was probably going to go train Leia first, right? Like, he says to her, you know, you have that power, too, and in time you'll learn to use it as I have, you know. But she clearly doesn't really have that full Jedi-ness. Like, she obviously she's attentive to the Force. She can feel Han's death, but she's not a Jedi. And it makes sense for Leia's character, right? Like, Luke probably trained her a little bit, but she was probably so busy, you know, building this new Republic that always took precedence. And that was always held up in the EU novels too, right? Like, it took a long time for Leia to finally become a Jedi because she was so busy with the government stuff. And that's who Leia is. And it seems like once Kylo falls, she literally kind of just gives up on that stuff because now she's got to start forming this resistance. So her life has always been kind of a political push. So, you know, to me, it makes sense that she's not a full-blown Jedi.
It was kind of like the Yoda moment in Order 66. I mean, she felt like she knew that he was gone. That was kind of like that was kind of a neat thing. I mean, for Han going out like he did, at least, like, as an audience, we got to feel some more, like, we got it through Chewie and we got it through Leia as well, like, to see her kind of, like you said, crumble over, like, she feels like there goes Han, and maybe, like, there goes my son, too, at least at this point. I mean, that'll be debatable for the next year and a half and see where we go with that, but That was just like a little, like I said, there's a few things that I've been nitpicking here and there, but it, you know, like I said, it's really minimal. I think the other thing that I kind of, that kind of drew me out just for a moment was the, I can't remember the name of the creatures that were,
the like, Rolf,
you know, the, Rolf yeah, Snappen. That,
they don't
that kind of pulled me out. It didn't fit. It felt, you know what it felt to me? It felt Men in Black to me. And it kind of drew me out.
Yep, I agree. I
completely agree. That's the only part of that movie that I don't like. And the part of the movie is okay, but the Rolf-tars are so not Star Wars-y.
I just, I just thought they looked dumb.
Yep.
Yeah.
Big and round.
To, you know?
Well, you remember the Rebels? They had that little creature that when he got scared, he ballooned up like a big, huge balloon.
Right, yeah. Right.
To me, that's the same thing. I'm like, what in the hell is this?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, what?
Yeah.
But I just thought they were weird looking.
And it, all it was for is it didn't really serve like the story at all. It was just like a, you know, just a way for them to get out and get away from the two. I can't remember what the names of the two
groups.
The gangs.
But, so the gangs, yeah.
Korean gang, but that gang, and then like Kanja Club.
Kanja Club. That's it. Yeah.
What were your disappointments? Did you have any
disappointments?
Yeah.
Yeah, I started saying, like, just some of the things that I've been nitpicking, it was, you know, little things like that I kind of thought was out of place. I thought Leia was not the greatest, but I can forgive that. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
What else? Oh, another thing that I thought was, but it makes sense now that at first I was sort of somewhat disappointed, but then I thought about, like, no, this is part of the story. This is where I tell people, you know, you got to make sure you know that this is an overarching thing. Not everything's going to happen here. It's going to be an empire. It's going to be in the next one and the next one. So, like, the lightsaber fights, I thought we were going to see a lot more advanced force use, which I think we did. Now that I think about it, we did see some advanced force use, but the lightsaber combat was kind of not what I was expecting. But it makes sense to the story because this is a new, you know, Luke was training a whole new order, he necessarily wasn't the greatest lightsaber fighter. You know, he didn't have a lot of training in that. So I can understand where Kylo wasn't the greatest lightsaber fighter at this point. But these two, him and Rey, are still at the beginning stages of their learning how to use the lightsaber. And look at his lightsaber itself. I mean, you can tell that it wasn't. Maybe here's another thing. Maybe he left, when he left, he was still learning how to build, and that's why his lightsaber is so wonky and so nasty and just gritty and all that, is because he didn't learn how to use that thing well enough yet, and he didn't build it correctly yet. So,
properly.
But I think we'll get that later on. Maybe we'll get some advanced lightsaber combat. I think we're building to a major, major combat between maybe Snoke and Luke and Rey and Kylo, but we'll get to that in future podcasts. And then I'm trying to think of any other disappointments. Not really. I mean, here's the thing about Luke. I was kind of disappointed because in the fight between Kylo and Rey, when he is trying to force pull Luke's lightsaber to him, I thought for a second when it whizzed past him, I go, it's going to Luke. But then I thought, you know what I mean? Like, oh my God, we're going to see Luke fight. But then I thought, no, okay, I get it now.
Scoot said the same thing. He goes, oh my God, it's going to be Luke. I said, no.
Yeah, I know. And again, I get it now. I know why they didn't do this, because that, you just can't have Luke at this point. I mean, we're going to see him later on. He's going to have a bigger, you know, he would have torched Kylo at this point. Yeah. So you can't do that right now.
And the look on her face was fantastic.
At first I was a little disappointed that we didn't get more Luke, but it makes total sense. Even Michael Arndt and JJ and Kazan said, we tried to write, I don't know if you guys heard this, they tried to write Luke in earlier into the movie, but they thought, you know what? Luke, once you introduce him, he takes over the whole movie. Everybody else just kind of goes by the wayside. And it makes total sense now.
Yep.
You know, I think about that and I go, it makes sense. Okay, no wonder they put him at the end, and we'll see him in 8 and 9 as a bigger role. So, other than that, there's not really any other things I can critique. But Carl, what do you think?
I think that's a great point, you know, about not bringing Luke in too soon, because he would have stole the show. And I'm with you, you know, I was a small tinge of me like was hoping that it was Luke calling that lightsaber, but I'm so glad it wasn't, because like you just said, he would have you know, he would have destroyed Kylo easily. Yeah. And it's perfect. That's one of my favorite moments in the movie as well. The music cue is fantastic, and they, you know, kind of figure it out how to fight along the way. That was awesome. And that was what's so great about The Force Awakens is this movie clearly was, it was introducing us specifically to Rey and Finn, you know, and that was the job of the movie. And that's why, like, really, like, the first third of the movie is setting their characters up, because Han doesn't even appear till, like, you know, two thirds of the way into the movie, which, again, I think is important, because he could have easily stolen the show as well.
Right.
So I think it was so great that they gave us a new story with great new characters, and then they started filtering in our originals and letting them actually make sense in the story. I loved that. As far as disappointments go, I had a couple. I think one of the odd ones I had is I felt like a lot of the blaster sounds sounded too Star Trek-y to me at times. Like they didn't sound like your typical Star Wars laser blasts. The blasters. I didn't hate it. I just was like, why do they sound weird? I mean, they're new types of guns. Maybe they just have a more refined sound. I mean, it's 30 years later for sure. but that kind of annoyed me. We already talked about the Rawlthars. They sucked. There should have been Wampas in there at least. Make it cool. you know,
baby Rancors.
Yeah, or Rancors. That was honestly really it. More Maz Kanata would have been nice. And that was, you know, those were the only little pet peeves is that, you know, you kind of already talked about this, Matt, but like the fact that we don't see Hux and Kylo escape. Like,
yeah, that was another one.
It's kind of assumed that they got out.
Yeah.
And Maz Kanata as well. Like we see her last time, you know, kind of saying to Finn, like, you've got a weapon, but we don't see her again. Like,
yeah,
it's implied that she's, and notice in one of those, you know, one of the trailers that we got, we see Maz Kanata handing what clearly looks to be Leia, Luke's lightsaber, but that shot is not in the movie.
Right.
Maybe it's a deleted scene, right? Like, I do think Maz does go back with them to the Rebel base. We just don't see her. Maybe that stuff was cut out because I just had too much. I don't know, but, that was the only, like, little pet peeves. I wish they had, set that up a little better. My overarching thing, the first time I saw it, and I don't want to say I left that movie theater the very first time loving it, and I've loved it more each subsequent time I've watched it, and I can't wait to see it again tomorrow night. I think the only thing that kind of bummed me out a little bit, and I was saying this to my girlfriend when we were driving back, that it's just the only thing that's kind of upsetting is the fact that when Jedi ends, it is literally the perfect ending, right? I mean, everything, the order's been restored, the Force is back in balance, like. Everybody's happy. It's the perfect happy ending. So to come back and undo that, you really have to have somewhere to go. So I think that was just kind of sad to me. It's like, oh, nuts. Like, the story came undone. Like, everything was so great 30 years ago at the end of Jedi. Why is everything gone to hell? And I think they do a great job explaining it and all that. And I just think it's really important that the sequel trilogy, though, doesn't make the original trilogy in vain. Like, it needs to be like, the light did win, and now the light is still going to prevail, even in the midst of this new darkness. I think that's really important, like, thematically for the story. And if they don't do that well, I mean, because you can, you know, at the end of the day, you didn't need to tell another story after Jedi. You really don't. And I think, and this is why, again, not to get too off topic, and I apologize, I'm, like, stealing so much time right now, but, you know, I think the reason I got bored of the EU is because it just became so freaking, like, repetitive, and I got so bored of the stories. Like, how many more times can they fight the Empire Remnant? Okay, the Yu Zha Vong, they're stupid. I hated that story. and then, like, oh, okay, well, we're gonna make their, you know, Darth Cadus, you know, Jason Solo Falls, which is like, okay, that's finally compelling, but a little bit, you know, poorly written series, though, like, so it kind of sucked, in my opinion. But,
really,
you
know, drawn, like, out.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it fizzled out. So I was really happy that they got rid of the EU, not because, like, I hate all of it, definitely not. I loved so much of the EU, but I think it's really great because now they're taking the story, right? Like, for 30 years, there has been peace. I mean, look at the EU. It's basically like the day after the Battle of Endor, it, like, crap's already hitting the fan, and it doesn't stop hitting the fan ever, you know? So I think it's cool that with at least Jedi, it's been 30 years of relative peace, and now things have finally started to fully fall apart. And think about that. Look at, like, between episodes 3 and 4, you know, it's 20 years of darkness and then it's redeemed. Well, now it's 30 years. The dark has kind of slowly come back. And that's realistic. That's realistic to a story. So, you know, I'm glad that they handled it so well, and I can't wait to see how that continues.
Yeah,
so,
and the First Order is relatively new at this point.
Right. Yeah. You know, Jason made the point on our episode last night that, you know, at the end of this movie, both sides are kind of starting over.
Yeah.
The Republic's been wiped out, so the Resistance is on its own. But the First Order lost a ton by losing Starkiller Base. So it's kind of like two new powers vying for supremacy in the galaxy. So that's kind of
point.
Chris, since you brought up any disappointments?
Well, after the little nitpicks that y'all had, yeah. I was like you said, Matt, I was disappointed that Luke was just in that one piece, but you're right, it fits. It made sense with the story. The only other thing that really was a disappointment to me was Captain Phasma. I wanted more of the character. I mean, I thought the character was good. I wanted to see more of it. We didn't get hardly anything from her. A little bit at the beginning, the little piece, you know, it going into the final sequence of the movie, and I'm like, that's it? So, you know, with that, I was a little disappointed. But that's pretty much it. Just a couple of the nitpicks that we mentioned. And one thing I want to call it right now, Snoke. The fact that I think he is a short person. You know, obviously he is a average sized person. He just, you know, the hologram makes him look huge, right? But he's a short person, or like a midget, so to speak. He's shorter than normal because that's why he projects himself so hugely. Just a little thing I thought of when I saw it.
Yeah, there were so many questions that came out of this. I mean, of course, Snoke is a big one. Like, who is he? Where did he come from? What's going on with him? I mean, that's going to be a huge part of the next couple movies. I don't know. We can go on for a lot longer on this, and we will in future episodes.
No other
problems or disappointments. Just a few that I mentioned there. Just little nitpicky things, but all in all, I mean, I think, again, like I said, just the more you see it, and you realize that this is the first part of a huge journey.
Yep.
That this was really the jumping off point, and Rian Johnson and Colin Trevorrow have so much to work with now, and they're already pretty much done. I guess they're done writing it. They're going to start filming Episode 8 here in January, I believe they said.
Yeah.
So. So, and then Kathleen said that all the characters are coming back. So which was kind of odd because she said all the characters and everybody's like, wait a minute, didn't Han Solo, Harrison Ford die? Yeah. I don't know. I think.
Well, she said that before the movie came out. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So, any, I guess we can kind of wrap it up here and just the final thoughts. I mean, I think that. Like I said earlier to start this podcast, what a task JJ had. And I think he really did pull it off. I mean, aside from little nitpicky things that everybody's going to have. I mean, no movie's going to be perfect anymore, especially with our expectations going into this. I mean, the hype surrounding this, I mean, it rivaled the episode one hype. And it's debatable on which one had more hype. But this thing is what? Is this recording, Chris, I think it's well over probably $600 million worldwide by now.
Probably,
this was as of yesterday, and of course everybody's been seeing it. And it hasn't even started in China yet. So
once
we get those numbers in, it's going to go crazy. I mean,
yeah, the actual numbers.
Like, when they announced this, I knew this thing was going to do $1 billion. I don't know if it'll beat Avatar and all that, but I know it'll get to $1 billion pretty easily.
Yeah. Well, they announced the numbers today, and the 3-day weekend was a record, 247 million, 247.9, and worldwide was 514 just for the 3 days. So, yeah, pretty strong.
There you go right there. I mean, another thing that kind of tickled me was, like, I saw it in IMAX with my parents. They came to one of the times I've seen it. And when my dad, he's around, you know, Harrison's age, he's, you know, 69, 70, and he came out, and he was around for, obviously, the original. He took me when I was a kid, and to see his face, like, I looked over a few times during some of the Han Solo moments, because he's a Han Solo guy and he loves the comedy of Star Wars, and to see him laugh at some of the jokes, especially the "Are you cold?" one, and I looked over and I saw him laugh, and he came out of the theater and he was smiling. He goes, "Man, that was really good," and he hasn't said that since the originals. You know, he wasn't obviously not a fan of the prequels and all that, so to have him come out of that theater and smile and go, man, that was really good. I was like, okay, now I know that this is not just me being a fanboy. This is like, you know, to everybody. And this thing is trending like on Rotten Tomatoes, like way over, you know, it's over 90%. It's getting like 95. Pretty much 95. I mean, so that'll tell you right there. I mean, it's doing what it meant, and JJ hit it out of the park and set it up so great for these other guys. And I'll just say to round it out that I think we're going to look back on this, guys. I think we're going to look back on The Force Awakens when these other two come out and go, this might even be the weakest of the three, even though it's not weak. You know what I mean? It's like debating which of the original, like you, some people think Star Wars, some people think Empire, some people think Return of the Jedi, but I think we might look back at this and go, wow, this was kind of like maybe the weakest as far as the next two. We're going to get so much great stuff finding out about all these characters that were set up in this movie that we're going to find out. And so that's what I'm so excited for. Carl, final thoughts before we kind of wrap it up?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much to add to what you said, but yeah, I mean, I think it's a great setup to a new saga, to a new story, by keeping us connected to the past, but, you know, giving us a really cool new future with where the story is going to go. Like Maz Kanata says, the belonging you seek is not behind you, but ahead. So, yeah.
I just remember that.
Yeah. I love Maz Kanata. She crushed it in that movie. That was my favorite side character by far ever in Star Wars. So, cause, you know, we needed a Force guru and she was it for now. And it was cool that she's not a Jedi, but anyway.
Right.
Now, talking about Maz Kanata, close to show. But yeah, I think it was great because it recaptured that feel of Star Wars without it being just overly reliant on like nods to the classic trilogy. Mm-hmm. And it was a great story with great characters and the fact that the Force is back, right? Like the prequels, the Force is barely talked about, really. I mean, other than like just trying to figure it out, but there's never like any of those like spiritual, mystical moments where like, or points of being taught about the Force. That's completely lacking from the prequels, which I think is partially on purpose. But, you know, like having that back, like having, you know, my favorite line right now from the film is when Maz Kanata says, you know, the light has always been in you. Let it go. You know, I love that. Like, I think that's so cool. Like, it's kind of to me, it's an homage to the new sequel trilogy. Like, the light of the Force has always been with us. Now it's time to, like, let it back in again and see where it takes us. So I think that's really cool. I love where the story is going. It's taking us to depths that the originals did, and I like the prequels and I do. I thoroughly enjoy the prequels, but they lack a lot of depth because of wooden acting, poor script writing, and let's be honest, those movies freaking relied on CGI. JJ didn't want to, you know, it was very clear he wanted to tell a great story, and then he would use whatever was necessary to make that happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a great story with characters we already love. And there are some serious implications of where our story has to go. And I love that. You know, when that movie ended, you're like, holy crap, can episode 8 please come out tomorrow?
I know, that's the thing.
I don't know how the hell you guys survived in 1977 or 1980, like after Empire.
Yeah,
how you guys did it.
3 years.
Yeah, with no internet and spoilers and all that.
Right.
I felt the same way. Like the first time I saw it, like, oh my God, you're going to end it like that? You're killing me. It's like you immediately want to sit down and go, okay, let's tell you the next chapter. And that's what I tell everybody. You're going to walk out of the theater going, man, I can't wait for the next chapter to see what happens. I mean, and we don't have to wait. Thank goodness we don't have to wait 3 years anymore. It's just a year and a half.
Yeah.
So, Chris, any final thoughts?
Y'all pretty much said everything. I think the big thing is we went into this movie, we got some answers, and then we got some new questions about what's to come. And today, one of the guys at work, he said he wouldn't go see it until everything died down a little bit. Well, he got a chance to go see it over the weekend, and he was telling me, he said, look, first off, I thought it was fantastic. He said, but the only gripe I have is that it felt like the first part of a big story. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That's what it's supposed to be. I'm like, I guess he was disappointed that, oh, we've got more questions. Well, yeah. That's if we didn't have any questions, we wouldn't have anything to look forward to. We wouldn't have anything to speculate. Now we can speculate for 18 more months. We can discuss these characters. And, I mean, it's just fantastic. I mean, I am so looking forward to, like you said, I wanted to say, oh, man, we got to wait 18 more months. But then again, you're like, oh, we only got to wait 18 more months instead of three years. So, yeah, that.
The prequels is 3 years, yeah.
You know, between Star Wars and Empire, we didn't know that there was going to be a sequel until, you know, later on. I might have heard about it. And I was like, oh, cool, we got another Star Wars movie. But then after Empire, you knew there was going to be another one because they left it as a cliffhanger. And to have to wait 3 years to find out what happened to Han, that was my main concern.
Yeah. The Empire 2 was, you know, is Luke really, is Darth Vader really the father? I mean, that was another thing you were like dying to find out. So, only a year and a half, which is good. And we have, you know, Rebels and we have Rogue One coming out in the meantime. So that'll kind of take away our attention for a little bit. But yeah, it's all about episode 8, man. I can't wait. And again, like I said earlier, we're going to go through these theories and speculations for the next 18 months on the podcast, so we don't have to worry about that. We'll get to some more stuff. This is just kind of our initial reactions to some of the characters, some of our theories, some of our speculation, and maybe some of the things we thought didn't work. But we'll get into it more, of course, as the years go on. Carl, you guys did your podcast, sounds like yesterday. So for those that maybe don't know, I'm sure everybody knows, listens to this, but where can they find it if they want to check it out?
What do you mean, where can they find the carbon copy of the Sarlacc Pit?
you guys are Brent Sock, man. You guys are good. But yeah, where can they find it?
You can on Facebook, facebook.com/WampusLairPodcast. We have a Twitter, twitter.com/WampusLair. So yeah, definitely check out the Wampus Lair podcast. We're part of the Star Wars Report Network. I will never say enough. I love the Sarlacc Pit. I'm so glad you guys let me on, especially to talk this new movie. I couldn't wait to hear your guys' thoughts as well. Chris and I have been texting quite a bit leading up to it and afterwards. And, you know, I couldn't wait to get on here and talk about this stuff with you guys. So thank you so much for letting me come on. I really appreciate it. I always love talking with you guys.
Oh, yeah. Good times, man. Good times. Chris, where can they find us again?
SarlaccPitPodcast.com is our main website. Also, you can find us on iTunes and on Facebook, facebook.com/SarlaccPitPodcast. And then, of course, my other big pages, Classic Star Wars and Star Wars Now on Facebook. And then on Twitter, got @ClassicStarWars. So that's where you can find us and communicate with us.
Sounds good, man. The Force has awakened. And, boy, I tell you what, I was excited. I'm happy, and I'm sure you guys were as well listening to this. But that'll do it for this episode of the Sarlacc Pit Podcast. We thank you guys for making us part of your day. For Carl and Chris, my name is Matt. We'll see you guys next time in the Sarlacc Pit.
Thank you for joining us on the Sarlacc Pit, the official podcast of GalacticBinder.com and YodasNews.com. Star Wars, its logo, and all things in the Star Wars universe are the property of Lucasfilm Limited. All rights reserved. All original content within this podcast, unless otherwise indicated, is the intellectual property of GalacticBinder.com and YodasNews.com.